Hello and welcome to the first ever edition of the Power Up and Game podcast, formerly known as the Nerd Stash Show. As mentioned in our content update episode, we're not changing things up too much for the time being. New episodes of this podcast are still coming out on Mondays. If that ever changes, we'll let you know beforehand. We're also still talking about video games, whether that be gaming news or deep dive discussions. Speaking of which, let's talk about today's episode. We are going to be talking about Elden Ring, which is just the topic of conversation in all sorts of gaming circles, whether it being, is it overrated? Is it one of the best games of all time? Is it definitely game of the year? We're going to find out today with our panel of experts. First up, someone who has put in over 20 plus hours in two games back to back in our deep dive discussions. She is, I want to say, the expert of From Software Games on this panel, Riley Logue. Riley, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I don't know if I would really, in this discussion, consider myself the expert because I have only played Bloodborne and Demon's Souls. But
yeah, I feel like I kind of set you up for failure. I'm sorry.
I do well for myself, I'd say, in the From Software universe.
Well, you've talked about many times about your love for these kind of games, so that's why I wanted to point it out there. But there's a very good point, Riley, and why I set you up for failure. Because we also have a special guest today on our panel, from thenerdstash.com, a man who has put in over, let me make sure I got this right, I'm looking at it, over at 176 hours in the Elden Ring. This man put in the work for the NerdStash.com review for it, and he's joining us today, Matt Vallée. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for that introduction. And Riley, I'm glad you're back down, because I would have quickly thrown my gauntlet down for Souls expert on the panel, having played all of them, multiple playthroughs on all of them. And as you just said, probably a few too many hours on Elden Ring these last few weeks.
Hey, it's much appreciated. People, like, even when what I loved about the reviews when they came out, when the embargo lifted, is how everybody went, hey, alright, I know we're gonna get killed for this. Like, all the reviewers went, I know we're gonna get killed for this. Trust me, this game is fucking massive. You're not gonna beat it in, like, 30 hours. I've spent 60 hours, I'm not even close. I love how everybody pretty much had some variation of that to say. And
yeah,
like, they were absolutely right.
No, you were saying before we got everything started of like, you guys are like only put some time in, only 20 hours, and I was saying, like, I hit a point of the game where I thought it was the ending and I still had 40 hours to go to see credits. Like, it is that big of a game.
Real quick though, I want to get some background on these From Software games, because From Software games aren't for everybody. I gotta say that. I don't think it's a genre. I think it's just a genre of itself at this point. I think it's genre that's for everyone. Riley, you've talked about in this podcast several times about your love for the franchise. Anything you want to add that I don't think you've mentioned before?
No, just that Bloodborne is probably my favorite game of all time. And then I recently played through the and recently finished, actually, the remake of Demon's Souls, so that's about my extent of experience with the series.
And Matt, do you got anything to say about From Software games in general? You are definitely a fan, I could tell.
Yeah, play Bloodborne is definitely the first thing to always say. It's my second favorite game of all time. I mentioned that in my review. When you're saying it's, like, not for everyone, yeah, it's definitely true, because not everyone can, you know, put the time aside to, you know, practice and, you know, put, you know, the get good mentality of it all. But I do think there is something, as we will talk about with Elden Ring, that I think makes it a bit more approachable than those other games. Because I feel like those games always demand you to learn the mechanics right off the jump, which is something I really appreciate about it, that they are willing to throw you in there and say, learn. And, you know, some people, you know, hit that wall, and there are tons of other games, and you'll be like, I want to play something else rather than doing that, and that's totally fine. And I feel like Elden Ring, with how popular it is, I think a lot more people are going to hit those walls, but due to its open world nature, will be able to go and kind of learn those mechanics and kind of get a feel for the Souls games much better than the more like kind of linear level based of the previous games.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point. And that's something I'm seeing around a lot with the reviews. And speaking of reviews, let's move on and talk about a few reviews that we picked out here. A review roundup of sorts. So we just got about four or five of these, kind of how we did with the Horizon Zero Dawn episode, which Michael and Riley crushed. And we're going to start out with Mitchell Saltzman of IGN, who said, quote, "It is no exaggeration to say that Elden Ring is From Software's largest and most ambitious game yet, and that ambition is more than paid off. Even after 87 hours of blood, sweat, and tears that included some of the most challenging fights I've ever fought and innumerable surprises, there are still bosses that I left on the table, secrets that I've yet to uncover, side quests that I've missed out on, tons of weapons, spells, and skills that I've never used. And this is all on top of the PvP and cooperative play that I've barely been able to scratch the surface of. Throughout it all, while the fundamental of combat haven't changed much from what we've seen before, the enormous variety of viciously designed enemies and the brutal but surmountable bosses that have brought its battles to a new level, even with all the threads I didn't manage to tug on my first playthrough, of which I'm sure will be several." Matt, I'm sure we're going to talk about your several playthroughs here in a few seconds, but going back to the IGN review, "what I was treated to can easily be held amongst the best open world games I've ever played. Like The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild before it, Elden Ring is one we'll be looking back on as a game that moved the genre forward." And IGN gave it a 10 out of 10. Next up, we have Tamor Hussein of GameSpot, who said, quote, "In a genre that has become wrought with bloated and overdesigned games, Elden Ring is defiantly contrarian in almost every way. Its commitment to design by subtraction and to placing the responsibility of charting a path through its world entirely on the player makes it stand head and shoulders above the open world titles. Elden Ring takes the shards of what came before and forges them into something that will go down in history as one of the all-time greats. A triumph in design and creativity, and an open world game that distinguishes itself for what it doesn't do as much as what it does." GameSpot also gave it a 10 out of 10. And here's the thing. We just talked about how big this game is. GameSpot's review is still a review in progress. That's how large this game is. Next up, we have Jay Henningsen of GamesBeat, who said, quote, "My nitpicking aside, Elden Ring has absolutely given me more enjoyment than I've had with a game in a long while, and it has edged out the Demon's Souls remake for my favorite game on the PS5, and it even looks almost as good as Demon's Souls, though I do understand why the developer had to rein in the level of detail just a bit, because Elden Ring is many times larger and has more visible on the screen at any given time. Maybe I've just become jaded by all games lately that I think they're overhyped and then under-delivered, but Elden Ring is a rare example of a game that grabbed a hold of me and won't let go. I'm joyfully exploring every inch of the land and delighting in my discoveries, and I don't see myself stopping anytime soon." GameSpot gave it a... Or gave it a 5 out of 5. Next up, we have Daniel Tack of Game Informer, who said, quote, "Elden Ring challenged me, captivated me, and enchanted me. An unyielding deluge of discovery and artistic vision unbound. Elden Ring represents a truly amazing combination of various game elements that all come together to create something fascinating, special, and unforgettable. Elden Ring isn't just the best game this year. It's one of the best games ever made." Game Informer gave it a 10 out of 10. And last but not least, we have Chris Carter of Destructoid. Quote, "To say I was blown away by Elden Ring is an understatement. Sure, it's still going to appear esoteric and unapproachable to a subset of people, these are things that could still do better in terms of onboarding, and it could do even more on the front of quality of life enhancements to returning Souls players. But as an experience, it's one of the most wondrous and open-world games, open-ended games I've played in years. It has so much to say from a design perspective that people will be talking about in its choices for years on end and playing it for longer. And Destructoid gave it a 10 out of 10. Oof, that was a lot. That's a lot of praise.
A lot of perfect scores.
A lot of perfect scores. So, Matt, we're going to talk about your review here in a second. But okay. Before we do that, what do you make of all these reviews? Because you're right, there's a lot of perfect scores, and if it's not a perfect score, it seems to be pretty damn close.
Yeah. I mean, just from these excerpts, they all really hit the nail on the head where, like, it is such an engrossing game that I feel like 90% of the time, at lowest 85, that it nails everything that it attempts to do. And with, like, I said it, Bloodborne is my second favorite game of all time. Riley said it's her favorite game of all time. It is games that are already so well beloved, and they made a transition to an open world style, an open world game so well that it's almost not impossible to not give it praise, because they have been able to transfer this entire genre to a genre that is kind of, as I think it was the GameSpot review that said it, like, a genre that has been bloated and over-designed for years. They were able to make that transition so fluently that it's just taking everything that people already love about the series and just blowing it up. I called it, like, the summary section of my review, I just quoted and say, bigger Dark Souls. And for games that are already loved, like, that's big enough praise in and of itself.
Riley, what do you make from these reviews? As somebody, because you've been very vocal on this podcast, like, you're not somebody who comes from the journalism world. So how do you take it as just, like, somebody who just plays games and from the outsider perspective? Like, these are just 10s out of 10s across the board.
Yeah, every review, at least on this list, is a, you know, 10 out of 10 or 5 out of 5. And there's that image that got shared around, like, the day before Elden Ring came out, where it was, like, all the reviews from all these different sites that are just, like, perfect scores. And I think the game definitely deserves that. I mean, like Matt said, I think the Souls, whatever you want to call it, the From Software genre, they did a really good job of transitioning into the open world gameplay fluently and better than maybe any game has ever done it before, including Breath of the Wild. And I was kind of shocked. The first time I heard about the fact that Elden Ring was going to be an open world game, I think, was on this podcast. And I was very critical of that because, you know, I haven't played every From Software game, obviously, but it seems like a core component of those games previously was somewhat linear level design with different paths that you can take and shortcuts and things like that. And so I was kind of skeptical of the idea that it was going to go into, you know, kind of an open world type design. But yeah, when I started playing it, I think the first thoughts that I had was, holy shit, I can't believe I'm actually playing this. And then also just like, well, where do I want to go? What do I want to do? And like, in the beginning of the game, the like sites of grace that you visit, which are like, you know, like the bonfires in Dark Souls or the lanterns in Bloodborne, they give you kind of like, they tell you kind of a general direction to go. But I was like, nah, fuck that. I'm just going to go where I want to go. And it's been one of the most pleasurable experiences that I've ever had playing a game because it doesn't tell you anything. And the sense of discovery is purely on you as the player, which is really rewarding Because you, as the player, at least this is how I felt, really feel like you discovered something, right? Rather than the map telling you that you had a quest that you needed to go to, or you can go to here to find this type of item, it really just feels like, okay, go anywhere and find whatever is existing there. And there's been multiple times in this playthrough where I've been like, holy shit, what is that? Which is very, very fun feeling.
Yeah, Riley, you said the being critical when you first heard about it. I was the same way. And yeah. I even, like, I'm not critical of it now, but at the end, I'm not someone who is going to go out of their way to play an open world game. I do like those more tightly constructed levels like the older games. But this transition from the level-based, you know, kind of non-linear but still level-based design, they've been able to retain that sense of discovery from those old games where it's like, oh, I discovered this little side area. Like in Bloodborne, the entire upper part of the cathedral where you find Abritus, like completely optional zone, and you're like, wow, I found this through items and like, you know, putting together clues and everything. That's just the entire game. It's the game still retains that feeling of playing a Souls game, just with wide open areas and much more things to discover. Things that after 176 hours, I'm still like, oh wait, there's that thing over there, or there's that weapon over there. It's just it's as you said, it's that sense of discovery that they absolutely nail in this game.
Yeah.
I love if somebody had clicked on this podcast, like, man, I didn't like Elden Ring. Like, we're about 17-ish minutes into this thing. And I can't imagine if you did not care for this game, you're still listening.
Honestly. So, Thank you. But yeah. I don't. There are some things that I'm willing to talk about, you know, despite of if we look at the list of reviews, my also perfect score that I gave it for the Nerd Stash. There are some things that I will probably pick out when we, you know, get into more freeform discussion. But so stick around for that if you're thinking about clicking off.
You just talked about your review, Matt. Let's go ahead and talk about it. So let's read a quick excerpt from Matt's review at thenerdstash.com. Here's what he had to say. He said, quote, Elden Ring is a game that could present a new approach to its world design in a satisfying way while also refining its gameplay to be as tight as it's ever been, taking the best part of its predecessors into a system that allows for incredible variety in combat. The few noticeable blemishes are easy to forgive with the engaging gameplay, fascinating and expansive new world, and near-perfect presentation in terms of graphics, cutscene direction, art design, and music that makes Elden Ring a game that is a solid addition to From Software's catalog, with some aspects being at their best in this latest outing. It is not perfect, with some stumbles in the open world, but those moments are where the game lands, are some of the best you will find in a game. End quote. And Matt, as you mentioned earlier, you gave it a 5 out of 5. Ooh, let's talk about some general thoughts here. So I, just a disclosure here, I haven't had the chance to play Elden Ring very much. I've played about 10-15 minutes, so I'm not going to be a big part of this discussion. Riley, we already know what Matt thinks of Elden Ring. You've kind of talked about yourself. What are your general thoughts on the game? I'll just be stepping in for like a question here. I might talk about something going on that people have talked about before. Or if you guys bring up a good point and I think you need to expand upon it.
Sure.
So take it away, Riley. What are your general thoughts?
I love this game. Now, I say that Bloodborne is my favorite game of all time, but I think Elden Ring is the best Souls game in terms of its gameplay. The reason that I like Bloodborne a little bit more personally is just because of its world aesthetic that jives really well with me.
Same here.
Yeah, and I can't remember what the other reason was, but basically just the world aesthetic is the reason that I like Bloodborne a little bit more. But I think the gameplay in Elden Ring is, you know, absolutely superb and the best that a game in this series has. I think there is a little bit of something weird in the transition, though, because, you know, I have played, like I said, Bloodborne and Demon's Souls, and both of those games are fairly linear, and I think Bloodborne is much more linear than Demon's Souls. But both are still pretty much linear, with some branching paths and things like that. But the weird thing is you kind of have to, if you've played a Souls game before, or if you're a veteran of the series, you kind of have to reframe the gameplay in your mind a little bit, because when you're playing almost any of the other Souls games, you get the idea, like, I know I'm supposed to get past this. Like, there is an enemy in front of me, and I know that there is a way to defeat this enemy, but I just haven't figured out how to do that yet. In Elden Ring, it's a little bit different because of the nature of its open world, where it's like, maybe you're not supposed to be fighting this boss at all, and maybe you're significantly underleveled, and maybe you should just go somewhere else. Which I don't think is inherently a bad design. I actually think that leads to exploring the world more and finding different things. And, you know, I think on that level, Elden Ring is just absolutely superb. And the idea that...
I do want to jump in here, though.
Sure.
You mentioned the fact with, like, sometimes you're not, like, ready for this boss. And that's something I both like, and I could see a reason for newcomers not to like it as much.
Yeah.
For example, the tree sentinel at the beginning of the game, which is the only thing I feel like, my only expertise I can bring to this here, because I've met this tree sentinel, and that motherfucker's an asshole.
Yeah.
You can't beat him. Don't try. I feel like if you're an expert at these games, you probably can, but I tried about 5 or 6 times until I finally realized, oh, I'll come back.
Yeah, funny thing about the tree sentinel, I spent, let's see, one Saturday afternoon, probably 4 to 5 hours just fighting the tree sentinel over and over and over again, because I've watched some analysis of this game and why the tree sentinel is a great design choice, in that it tells the player that, it basically implants that idea in most players' heads that's like, I'm not supposed to be fighting this person right now, so maybe I should go level up a little bit. Which I did do, but I didn't level up enough or find enough materials in the world or whatever to properly fight the tree sentinel. But I still spent like 4 or 5 hours just banging my head against it. And eventually I did kill the tree sentinel. And I have never... Well, I have felt accomplishments like that in other Souls games, but it just felt a little bit extra sweet, I guess, in that moment. And then, he dropped a thing that I couldn't even use because I am a magic user in this game.
I was gonna say the exact same thing, where the tree sentinel drops you a giant halberd that you will need to be a strength build if you plan on using.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did dual wielding for my first playthrough, so I was like, nope, can't use that, so... Tree Sentinel is, like, as you said, a great design choice, like, for it's, like, it's supposed to instill in the player, maybe you go somewhere else, but even if you do stick it out and you fight him, you get something that's not useful for some builds.
That's right.
And what I like about that, too, is, like, you can be stubborn like Riley, which is also a lot of human beings on this planet, that you can just be like, you know what, no, I'm gonna try it one more fucking time, fuck this boss.
Yeah.
And... it's eventually, you're either going to beat the boss like Riley did, or you're going to go, nah, I'm good. There's something about that that's really, I guess it gives the player a little bit of freedom in a way by making the player make that decision at the very beginning of the game. Like, it is literally, you fight a boss at the beginning and you die, and then the first actual boss you face is, what, within 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's like right past the first sight of grace.
It's a game, it's like unforgiving, but at the same time, it somehow feels like it's giving you a pass. Like, oh no, you can run around if you want.
Yeah, like that's this thing that I was saying earlier with like just the open world design. Just that in general makes this game more approachable in a sense. Where in other Souls game, Riley, you said it before, just hit your head against the thing, and then, you know, you learn the mechanics, you learn the moves, and you do it. And this game is just like, hey, if you want to, except when it's like at the end of the game, like, and I'm like, this is the final boss, I need to beat it. But it's like, just go somewhere else, go explore somewhere else. There's either a boss that is simpler than the one you're fighting now, fight them, level up, or just go fight the trash mobs that are around the world. And as you learn the mechanics through that exploration, through those bosses, you're always got that objective in your mind of that tree sentinel is going down next time I see him. And then he crushes you again. It's like, oh, time to go and explore a little bit more. It's like a constant loop of like, am I strong enough? Let me go try. Didn't work, or it did work. But if it didn't work, go explore the open world some more. And it still feeds into that Souls loop just in a much more expansive way.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I also want to say that this is a game where one Saturday afternoon, it was the same day that I was fighting the Tree Sentinel over and over, I woke up, I still had my pajamas on, and I played like maybe 6 hours straight without going to the bathroom, without getting anything to drink, without getting any food, because I was so engrossed in the game. And my controller died, and I did something I haven't done since I was a kid, which was I plugged my controller in and sat like cross-legged in front of the TV because I just couldn't get enough. And I think that just speaks to how good the game is, how good I think the game is, because I haven't done that with any other game since I was a kid, really. I think also a lot of people are going to compare the game to Breath of the Wild. And I think there is I think that's a good discussion to have. Personally, I think this game speaks to me a little bit more than Breath of the Wild. And I also think that it is a better open world design than Breath of the Wild, because there's just more interesting things that you can find and things that you don't even know anything about. Whereas I feel in Breath of the Wild, it's kind of like, okay, you know, you're going to be looking out for some cool new weapons that will break, by the way. There is no.
I was about to say the same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, there's you're going to find Korok seeds and you're going to find shrines. But you know pretty much from the beginning of the game what all these things are going to do for you. So the game basically lies out like the rules at the beginning, where I feel like Elden Ring doesn't do that, and it just expects you to figure it out. And I really like that. Sometimes there's been just like there's random enemies in the world. They're not really enemies. They're just things that you kill so that you can re-up your flasks. Like, if you kill a certain number of enemies, you get another flask, or you get recharges on your flasks. But there's also like little tiny bug things that you can kill that do the same thing. And sometimes you just kill one randomly and it gives you these things called Ashes of War, which basically you can put on your weapon to make it do, you know, different things, whether that be giving it more damage or letting it do fire damage or whatever. So I just think that there's more unexplained things, more things that you're supposed to figure out on your own, which I really like.
Yeah, and those comparisons are very natural, by the way. Especially because the From Software games, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but they are influenced or inspired by the Legend of Zelda game.
Yes, I believe that's true.
It is, okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
The last thing that I think we've gotten is, like, in the whole gaming industry, as close as Elden Ring has been Breath of the Wild in terms of scope and scale. So I think there's that comparison naturally. It's going to happen. And I've seen some pushback against it, being like, oh, they're not really that... No, they kind of are, but at the same time, I 100% get what Riley's saying, that this game doesn't hold your hand, which is definitely from Software's MO.
Yeah. From that standpoint of like comparing Breath of the Wild and Elden Ring, I think the only thing comparable is that they take a bit more, they take like a series that, at least for the last few entries, weren't big, massive, expansive worlds and transitioned it into an open world, which is, you know, that's a fine comparison, but they do, I feel, play very differently in that sense. So it, I think it's a fine comparison as long as you're comparing it for like the reasons that they need to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, since playing Breath of the Wild, there hasn't been another game where I just, you know, look at something on the map and I'm like, or not even on the map, in the world, and I'm like, huh, I wonder what that is. I'm going to go towards that. Or I see something, like, I saw a couple of giant bears in the woods, and I was like, what the fuck is that? And then I decided to attack them, which was not a good idea.
No.
They wrecked me.
Yeah. Pro tip, don't just avoid the bears.
Yeah, I learned that, but...
Yeah.
You guys talked about the open world map, and I think that's the next topic I want to ask you both about. Because there's been a lot of, like, praise for how this game handles its open world. And it's not in a way that you would expect. Because as far as I know, it's not like nothing's laid out for you on the map. Like, it's just free exploration. And you can place markers, so you're the one placing, like, what your map looks like, in a sense. And there's something about that that's really cool to me. What do you guys think of all that? Because also, I think there's a way you could also expand your map as well. You're not given the full picture, and it's not really annoying. So what do you guys think of all that?
The thing about the map is that off the jump, you don't have a map. It is a blank page, and you have to go and find the fragments for the different world, like the different parts of the world. And when you pick them up, it gives you like an artistic rendering of the land, but nothing is labeled except for places that you have visited. So it's more of like a reminder of I've been here. And then, as you said, there are markers that you can personally place down where there's a merchant here, or there's a lot of enemies here, let me put that down. And as you're getting these different map fragments, the map just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But it's not like a thing where they show the entire map and then it's just like, oh, you have this small fragment. When you pick up your first fragment, the map, when you open it, is just that fragment. So it looks like it's the whole world. And then it slowly expands and expands and expands and expands. And you're like, when does the game end? You never know. It's not like a game where it's the open world, like, let's say like an Assassin's Creed game. I haven't played an Assassin's Creed in a couple years, but like before you go and do like a watchtower, like the viewpoint, you still have that area on the map. Just the points of interest aren't labeled, so you still know the overall size of the map.
You know where it ends.
Yeah, exactly. You know where it ends. Yeah, Elden Ring. You're constantly, you get to an area like, this is a kind of a, it's not a spoiler. It's just like you're told to go to the capital. Right, you're told to go to this capital that's underneath the big golden Erd tree, right? And I thought, like, oh, that's like one of the last areas in the game, even though like you're told to go there so early. It's, you know, it's like an Anor Londo. It's this big place, you do it, and there's maybe like a few sections afterwards. The game just goes past the capital, and I'm like, I thought this was like at least like end of the second act or something, but it's like, no, you're like still in the first. The game just keeps expanding. Because the map doesn't tell you how big it is until it's fully filled, which I think is great. And my favorite part about the map is because of the artistic rendering, it's like a drawing. You can pick out how the art of the map can distinguish different areas. So on the map, you will see little like drawings of like a building, and you're like, oh, even though I haven't been there, I know there's a building there because the map is... You can like decode saying that the map is telling me there's a building here. Or my favorite is there are tunnels, which is where you can find a lot of the smithing stones for upgrading. The tunnels you can go down, they're marked on the map as little like black dots with like red circles because it's supposed to simulate the light coming out of the tunnel. So if you're looking for tunnels that you haven't explored yet, you can open your map and be like, oh, that's a tunnel because I recognize it. Even though I haven't been there and it hasn't been labeled on my map, I have been able to figure out what that means on the map as like just an artistic rendering. So you know where to go without the game personally telling you there's a tunnel here, which I think is like absolutely fantastic. Like the map is like one of my favorite things with the open world because it gives you enough details to never be, quote unquote, never be lost. I got lost like once or twice, but there's enough detail that you always have a point of interest to go to, even if it's not one of the big dungeons or one of the big like Souls-like areas with a big boss at the end. You can always decipher the map enough to be like, I need to go there, I need to go there, I can go there to find this item. And that's absolutely fantastic.
Riley, I'll turn it over to you here in a second. I just want to add on to something Matt was saying here. So I had a buddy of mine tell me, like, apparently, and as soon as he said this, I was like, that checks out to where you can open a chest and it'll teleport you somewhere else. As soon as he said that, I was like, oh, nope, that's what I would expect from this kind of game. So he was telling me, he was about in the middle of the map, what he thought. It was like, oh, I think I got it. And then he got teleported to like a far area at the top. And when he looked back at the map, he was like, I thought I was done. Like, I'm nowhere close. Like, there's all this like in between that, like, he had no idea what was there. So I think you make a very good point about like how you just don't get all the picture at once, which I think is a really good thing because it gives that player, in my opinion, from somebody who hasn't played the game yet, but just like hearing what you both are saying, it gives a player like a sense of like exploration that games don't usually do. Like you said, Assassin's Creed, it gives you what the map's going to kind of look like in the end. And that's how most open world games are. So it's going to be interesting to see what games do that and take inspiration from Elden Ring and try to do something similar. Riley, what do you think of the map and everything with it?
Yeah, the crazy thing is, like, I still don't even have a concept of how big the world is because I've only found a few map fragments, and I've been playing 20 hours of the game. And, like, I feel like, you know, in Bloodborne and in Demon's Souls and maybe in the other Souls games, about this time in the playthrough, I would kind of be having, like, getting my bearings and kind of, like, okay, like, I know what I'm doing. Like, I know what I'm in for the rest of this thing. But in Elden Ring, it's like, I don't know. Like, I haven't even scratched the surface. I'm barely at the beginning still, you know? And part of that, I think, is because I haven't, like, beaten the first main boss or whatever. But it's just like, you know, I just go and I play and I try to find cool stuff. And I'm not really worried about like the scope of it. And I'm just enjoying it as it presents itself to me. I'm a spellcaster in this game, which this is the first like from game where I've tried out spellcasting. And I've only found, like, one spell so far that isn't the two beginning spells that my class gets. Just one other spell. So, you know, I have a long way to go. I'm imagining the map is huge, but I think it is a really good idea, like Matt is saying, the way that it presents itself to you, where you have to find pieces of the map in the world. Because to compare it to another game that we reviewed recently, not reviewed, but, you know, did a podcast episode on Horizon Forbidden West. The first thing I did in that game was I moved my cursor over the map and I was like, how big is this thing? Right? You can't do that in Elden Ring, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I just think it gives that player that sense of exploration. But by the way, Riley, you're an astrologer?
I am astrologer, that's right.
Fellow astrologer, there we go. I decided to do the same thing. I was like, you know, I typically like to play the knight build and everything, and I've heard a lot about how spell casting's pretty damn good in the game, so when I was making my build, I was like, you know, I would go here. I feel like I can still get some nice weapons out of it, too, that aren't casting spells. But the next thing I kind of want to talk about here is George R. R. Martin had a lot of input. I don't want to say a lot, but he had some input on the game, its lore and all that stuff. What do you both think of the story and the world that is Elden Ring? Riley, we'll start with you since we started with Matt last time.
Yeah, I really like the world and the story. You know, it's impossible to say how much input George R.R. Martin actually had, but it doesn't feel
It
like
seems a little vague from what they've said. Like,
yeah.
we're not getting definite, like, oh, here's everything George R. R. Martin did. And it's not the whole thing either. Like, From Software, I think it said, like, oh, yeah, he had some input on some parts of the game. And that was Bennett, I think.
To
But.
me, it feels a little more high fantasy than even something like Demon Souls in a way, because I don't know what it is exactly, but Demon Souls feels very grounded fantasy, even though there are like dragons and things around. It feels, you know, quite grounded, where in a sense Elden Ring does as well, but it just feels more high fantasy to me, more fantastical perhaps. And maybe that's where some of the influence came in. I gotta say though, I think that the story is kind of like, it's basically just a twisted version of Lord of the Rings. There's one ring and you're trying to put it back together. It's different, but I think like that influence is kind of, to me, very obvious, which is pretty cool. So yeah, I am really enjoying the story. And Matt, I think something that you said in your review is like characters, and it's everything is much more presented to you in a way. It's still vague and you still have to put things together and, you know, read item descriptions if you want to get the full picture. But, you know, characters will talk to you for like a significantly longer amount of time than they did in other From games. And it kind of gives you a better picture of what is going on in the world, which I really like. Although there's been some conversations that I don't think like I was supposed to happen yet for me, because I'm like, what the hell does that mean? But that's a lot of fun. There was one character that was telling me about some spider, and people attach their limbs to the spider or something to that effect. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds pretty cool. So yeah, I
Attach you
think.
to a jellyfish.
Yeah, yes, that's right. I got the jellyfish. That's another thing we should mention about the game is the spirits.
The spirits are fantastic.
Yeah, I love the spirits. That's another thing that you get in the game just for exploring or killing certain bosses or killing certain enemies. And they basically let you summon not another person, but a specific spirit. So like we're talking about, we have the jellyfish. Some character gives you the jellyfish spirit, which can help you like attack enemies and things like that. My favorite spirit that I've found so far are the skeletons. They're great because they'll distract like a big boss. Like they don't do much damage. They're not gonna help you on that front, but they will distract like if you're fighting a big boss. Like the skeletons were instrumental in me beating the tree sentinel, and I have no shame in saying that. And those are great because when they quote unquote die, they just basically come back. And I don't think the AI is smart enough to know to hit it, like hit the skeletons to kill them after they're down. So like, I don't know. I just have skeletons running around helping me out most of the time.
Yeah, early game skeletons were definitely my summon until I started finding some of the more legendary ones.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, I don't
You were talking
know.
about characters before we went on the jellyfish
Oh
tangent.
yeah. Yeah, I just think like they give you more lore and stuff, and I haven't even found like the quote unquote major characters or anything yet, really. There's a character that just wants to give you a hug. I find that very wholesome, although I read something on the internet that's like the thing that you get for hugging this character is like not like great. And so I don't know, but yeah, I haven't really delved like too deep into the story, but
Yeah. See, I find that wild because you put 20 hours into the game, which is actually a lot for a lot of games. Like, when you think
I
about it,
was thinking the same thing, where
I
it's
have
like, oh,
no idea.
I
It's
haven't
like,
beaten
if
the first
you.
major boss.
Yep.
Yeah. But, like, if you told me, oh, I put 20 hours into Guardians of the Galaxy, like, oh, cool, you're near the end of the game. You've spent a lot of freaking time into it. It is fucking wild to hear, like, I have yet to get to the first major boss, Oh, how you probably what 1 hour into it? No, I'm about 20 hours in. What?
Yeah, to be fair, that was kind of a conscious choice. Like, I don't want to fight the big major baddie
but,
that the
see,
game is
even
telling
if it's
me
a
to
conscious
do.
choice, though, Riley. Like, even if you were trying
Yeah.
as hard as you could to avoid it, I don't think you could spend 20 hours doing side shit in most games.
Yeah, not
like,
in most other
that's,
games.
I think just a credit to Elden Ring and how much is actually available to you.
Yeah.
And the side stuff, for the most part, I do have some grievances with it, but a lot of that side stuff is pretty good. Like, always have, like, a dungeon or a boss at the end that, you know, I'll say some pieces about some of the dungeon bosses, but at the very end, you get a reward that you always feel, even if your build can't use it, you're like, oh, this would be a useful tool somewhere for somebody. It never feels like, here's like some crafting materials that you're going to throw away, or here's a sword that's going to break in 5 seconds after completing the area. You personally might never use it, but if you were to do a build that weapon would be useful for, you would be like, I can go there, get that weapon, and I'll be able to use it in my build immediately. It feels like the side content, even outside like the side quests of like helping a character do something, just like the basic dungeons, even though I say some stuff about the side dungeons in my review, they are at the very least a very welcome part in the ecosystem of Elden Ring. That they keep the player constant, like not just roaming around doing nonsense. It's like, here we're gonna break up and do these mini Dark Souls like areas, very small, like a chalice dungeon in Bloodborne. Or it's like, here's these very small areas you can do them. You get a boss, you get an item, and I feel like that open worldness is very easy to suck 20 hours out of you without even seeing the first boss.
It sure is. I mean, I've fought a lot of bosses, but I haven't fought like the major first boss, right?
Yeah.
Or anything.
Yeah. Margit.
Yeah.
Up at Stormvale.
Yep.
Yeah. Like you're saying that, and like since like I did a lot of the side content, but I wanted to, you know, kind of like go get through the game a bit more on a bit of a good pace because I was doing the review. I finished Stormvale, the first major area. It took me 15 hours to beat it.
Ooh.
So it's like the first zone, and I'm like, oh, I should be halfway done Bloodborne by now or something like that. It's like, oh, the first area, and then I look out on the horizon. It's like, oh, cool, there's the next one all the way over there. Time to go spend the next, you know, 15 hours for this next area. And then it's like, oh, yeah, there's six. I thought you, like they're telling you about these bosses. And I'm not sure if you met the character Gideon from the opening. He looks like the Lich King type character.
I think I did, yeah.
Yeah, so you can talk to him in the Round Table Hold, which is like kind of the nexus of the game. And he, as you said before, the characters talk to you a lot more, and he just gives you a list of major characters that you need to hunt down, like the major bosses. And I'm like, oh, cool. Here are the bosses I'm going to need to beat. About 40 hours in, a new prompt came up that says unknown gods. And it's like, yeah, we don't know where these guys are. Can you go find them? And I'm like, I'm sorry, there's what? I just killed the fifth
40
one.
40 hours in?
Yeah, 40, maybe 50. It's like, oh, yeah, here's some new guys that you might need to go track down. And I'm like, I just killed, like, the fourth of the six. Like, I was coming back here for help on where to find the other two. What do you mean there's more unnamed ones?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Like, the game just keeps going, and at the but that side content can easily pull you away from that main story stuff, and most of it is really good.
So, I kind of get the feeling that that's where you gotta kind of have some problems with it, Matt. Let's talk about your issues with the game. Both of your issues with the game. Matt, what do you think is the worst aspects of Elden Ring? For a game that, for the past, just this whole podcast, we've been saying nothing but great things. What is something that you just don't think From Software nailed here with this game?
Reuse of bosses. They reuse, like, not in major story scenarios. I think there's one character that shows back up in the main story, but he gets a completely new phase and plays completely differently. So that's, you know, that's okay. And there's one area that has, like, the worst boss in the game. I absolutely hate it. It's called Godskin Duo. I hate it. They just take two bosses from earlier in the game that were, you know, they're annoying, but I don't think they're terrible. Like, they're, like, killer difficulty and just put them in the same room together, and they share one health bar, but each of them have an individual health bar, like, over their bodies, like regular enemies, and if you kill one of them, the other one just, like, summons it again. And I tried, this is me going off a tangent, because I complained for so long about this, that I thought, since they had this huge health pool, if you killed both of them before they had the chance to resummon, you would be able to skip the rest of the boss, and it would be kind of like a, like, you know, it's a challenge to do the whole health bar, but if you manage your time and go back and forth and kill both of them, you're good. You circumvented the rest of the fight. No, they just both get resummoned if they both die. And I was like, oh no, this is terrible. No. So that was the biggest wall I hit. And the worst part about it is, like, it's not even two unique enemies. It's two bosses I killed earlier in the game. So, like, that type of stuff is kind of annoying. And when I said about, like, the dungeons always giving you a reward, a lot of those dungeons do also will reuse some bosses, or they'll just, like, put two bosses together. And it's not the worst because it's side content, but, like, for an open world game that is, like, incentivizing you to go explore, I often found myself being like, oh, that's a disappointment, it's just this guy again, or it's just this. And that's, like, the biggest issue was, like, there's a noticeable amount of bosses that are either reused or they're just regular enemies with upscaled health, and I'm like, not the best. But the unique bosses, you know, I'm gonna go back to complimenting it, even though it is the negative section, those unique bosses in the game are absolutely fantastic, like some of the best stuff that From has done for their bosses. But they do kind of get overzealous with how many bosses they put in with some of those reused enemies.
Well, it's kind of what you put in the review. Like, it's easy to forgive mm-hmm. the problems of the game.
Yeah.
And you kind of just did that by talking about
yeah,
the negatives.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, you know, I have a problem with this, but still, the game does so well here, and you just start complimenting again. I found that hilarious.
Yeah.
Riley, what have you not really enjoyed about the game so far?
I think the only negative thing that I can say about it, I want to preface this by saying that I am playing on PS5, not on PC, but I think even on PS5, there is some noticeable frame rate drops and some laggy stuff like that, which, you know, is not really expected too much in a From Software game, but it's almost, at least on the PS5 version, it's almost not a big deal and kind of expected just by the scope of the game. But I've heard that on PC the performance for a lot of people is just atrocious, but even on PS5 sometimes, you know, frame rate drops and it gets a little bit clunky sometimes, which kind of takes away from, like, the beautiful aspects of the world. Like, the world is beautiful, but when that frame rate drops and you can just kind of notice it, it becomes a little less beautiful. But that's really the only major negative, and I don't even consider it to be that major, but I think it should be noted.
And to interject on that, because I did play it on PC, I was fortunate enough that I had very few technical hiccups. My game did crash 3 times in 80 hours. So, you know, some crashes, and I fell through the world once. But besides that, I've had very little, like, actual technical issues. Except for earlier today, actually. I was playing it, and I went to hit an enemy, and the game stuttered, and then I was dead when I got control back. So, that's one of those things where I'm like, oh, this is what people are talking about with the performance getting in the way. So, yeah, definitely some of the PC issues are should definitely be talked about there. Like again, in my review, I say that I didn't personally have that many issues, so I can't comment on it, but I do mention that, like, yeah, there have been reports of technical issues on the PC versions, especially.
I mentioned at the top of this podcast that From Software games aren't for everybody, and I think the next thing I want to bring up to both of you is gameplay. Because that's where I think really makes or breaks everybody's experience. What would you say to people who are just getting into a From Software game and just getting into it with Elden Ring? Like, any kind of tips, tricks? Because you both are experts in this genre of video game. what would you say to really help that player in what is arguably their most easy experience they're going to have with a From Software game?
I would definitely say just don't get, like, tilted, don't get mad, because that's the part where the game will start to eat you alive. And, you know, even, like, people who have a lot of experience with this game, you're not going to go through the whole game sunshine and rainbows. You're going to get mad. I got mad at certain points. Like, the final boss, I got really mad at, and then I put the game down. Next day, first thing I did in the morning was boot the game up, beat it my first try. So it's just, like, meet the game on its terms and try and learn what your encounters are teaching you. Because one of the things about FromSoft games is I always feel like every death, every interaction is a lesson. You're always learning with through your encounters with the world or with the enemies. Whether it be like, oh, there's a trap there, so I should, you know, look for where I'm stepping on this cobblestone road, like in Bloodborne, there's that famous bridge trap that kills a lot of players in the woods. It's every encounter you have in these games, try and pick out what it's trying to teach you, and go slow when you're learning the timing. When you're learning, if you're a sword and shield player, you know when those parry times are, and don't be scared to use help. Like, I feel like it has been conflated in a lot of Souls community, in the Souls community, of being like, no, you need to do it all by yourself, do it, you know, get good. It's like, no, just meet the game on your terms, a win's a win. Use those new mechanics that they introduce, use your summons, and try and take it as slow as possible, and really digest all those mechanics that the game is teaching you. And when you hit a wall, just either... In the old Souls games, it was slow down and try and learn this boss. But with Elden Ring, don't be scared to explore. You have those new routes to go, these new areas to travel to. So don't just bash your head against the wall. Try and go and look somewhere else. And try and build up your power to go back and take on that boss.
Yeah, I think that's really great to say, because that's another thing that's came out since the game released, and it's been kind of like a negative cloud over it. Is you do have that segment of fans, which there's always, every fan base has it, to where they just have a toxic section over there, where it's like, oh, get good, and it's some gatekeeping going on, you know? So I think what your advice is very good for new players. Like, hey, don't get too upset with it. Riley, what would you say?
Yeah, I would agree with all that. The one thing that I would add, maybe more explicitly, is just like, death is a part of these games. You're gonna die a lot, and that doesn't mean you're bad at the game. It just means that, like, that's the way these games work, right? You have to figure out what the boss is gonna do, what these enemies are gonna do, what you can do in response, and the game doesn't tell you any of this, so you have to, like, fighting a boss multiple times, sometimes many, many, many times, like, as I did with the Tree Sentinel, are gonna die a lot, but that is part of this experience. I would also say, use the horse. Use the horse a lot. For me, a horse-mage combo is about as OP as you can get, so if you want to get into, you know, the game like that, you don't get the horse exactly right away, but you do get it pretty early in the game. Once you get the horse, if you're new to the game, I would say, you know, maybe experiment with classes. I think the Astrologer class, especially early on, is very, very powerful, especially because a lot of almost every boss that I've come up against so far has had significant weakness to magic. So if you want a little bit of an easier experience, you can go that route and use the horse.
That's what I did, so that's good to know that I picked the right class to start out with.
It's not the mage isn't going to help you out. Like, being a mage isn't going to help you out with every, you know, boss, which I think is good. There's been some bosses that I've come up against that have still kicked my ass, and I've decided, like, you know what? I'm not going to fight you yet. Also, don't be afraid to use, you know, like, the spirits. And yeah, like Matt said, just don't be afraid to explore, come back to something. You know, in this game, you have the option of, like, well, this thing's really overpowered, so maybe I should just go over here and see what's over there. which I have done quite a few times.
Before I ask my last question, is there anything either of you want to talk about that we didn't do in this discussion? I tried to ask everything from gameplay to story and everything. So anything you guys want to say right now?
Two things. One, I actually don't think I talked about the story. I think we went off on a tangent and we kind of got around.
I think we kind of did. We talked about like characters, but that was pretty much it. So we went off on a tangent.
Yeah. Mainly, I think the story does a great job of like being very straightforward from the beginning, if that makes sense. Like, there's still a lot to... I think the way I explained it is that the setup for the world is way more clearer of, like, you know, there was a ring that, like, basically, like, ruled the land. It broke, and the children of the queen fought over it, and it caused a big war. And that's where I think the Martin comes in. It was, like, warring families and infighting families and everything. But that's, I feel like, when you getting into the world, you're learning about what's happening in the now, like, what the world situation is now, and that's what the discovery is. But I feel it's much more clear of, like, a big war between all of these demigods broke out, and now the world is destroyed because of it. You gotta go fix it. And that's it. And I feel like that's much more clearly stated and understandable in Elden Ring, that it made jumping into the story way more easy. It's way more simple to like get absorbed into the world, because you're like, okay, world's messed up because of these people, gotta go deal with them. And then, you know, the new story beats get introduced along the way.
It's more forgiving, because you already have some harsh gameplay, you have some harsh mechanics that are meant to be that way, so it's easy to have like a story that's not that difficult to get latched onto, which I feel like is a valid criticism of a lot of From Software games. So it's good that Elden Ring avoids that, from what you guys have been saying. Riley, or didn't you have something else, Matt?
Oh, me? One more thing would be that I feel like the side quest stories, like the major side quest stories with like the character of Ronnie or Fia, which is the girl that gives you the hug in the round table hold, their side quests are like a plus tier. Like Ronnie's entire thing with her and her like companions is the great stuff, and it also can tie into like the different endings that you can get into the game. Like, I feel like they really knocked it out of the park with some of the side quests in this game.
Riley, anything that you want to talk about that we didn't talk about in this discussion?
No, I think I've pretty much said my piece on the game.
I think the last thing before we wrap up and everything, we're not going to do like scores and everything. We already know Matt's score, by the way. But we're not going to do scores or anything like that. But I just want to ask here, because it's been all over the place since the game released, like 10s out of 10s, 5 out of 5s. We had Horizon Zero Dawn, or not Horizon Zero Dawn, Horizon Forbidden West, released, what, a week or two before Elden Ring. By the way, talk about a franchise having some shitty luck. Yeah. Horizon Zero Dawn,
Breath of the Wild,
released a week after Breath of the Wild, like Matt just said.
Yep.
Oh, man. And then Forbidden West just gets overshadowed by Elden Ring. Riley, you were on both deep dive discussions for Horizon Forbidden West and Elden Ring. I know you have not had time to play both games and put out an expert opinion, but we're on a podcast, and that demands responsibility for me to ask you the following question. What game's better? What's winning game of the year? And is Elden Ring the best game of all time? Riley,
crazy,
I'm sorry. I just put you completely
crazy
on spot. The spot there.
Crazy spot. Under the gun. Go for it.
Okay, here we go. What's the better game? Elden Ring. What do I think is going to win Game of the Year? I don't know. I definitely think Elden Ring deserves to win Game of the Year. However, I think at the end of the year, I think Horizon Forbidden West might have a slight edge over Elden Ring in the Game of the Year discussion, just because I feel like Forbidden West appeals to an even larger audience than Elden Ring does. Elden Ring feels like it's a perfect game for new players, yes, but mostly I feel like for people like me and Matt who have played these games before, and have some experience with them, it still feels, it doesn't feel like this game is like completely opening the floodgates to everybody to come in to play these games. I would recommend anybody play these games, but it still feels, it feels like, you know, if you don't really like From Software games, I don't know how much you're gonna like Elden Ring, right? But I think Forbidden West might have the edge over there. But considering Jeff Keighley's connections with Elden Ring, I wouldn't be surprised if that one won as well. And I definitely think
you,
it deserves
you know
to
me
win.
Too well. You know me too well. You knew I was about to bring up that Jeff Keighley connection.
Yeah.
And lastly, is Elden Ring one of the best games of the year?
Yeah.
Or best games ever made, I apologize.
Absolutely. I think it might be the best game ever made. There's a, but it's kind of hard for me to say that when I technically like Bloodborne a little bit more, because that speaks to me a little bit better. But in terms of gameplay, yeah, absolutely.
Matt, same questions. What do you think? Is this going to, what do you think is going to win Game of the Year? Is Elden Ring going to be one of the best games of all time, in your opinion? Take it away.
Oh, it's hard. I'll start with the Game of the Year one, because I feel like that's more straightforward. I think Ragnarok is coming out. It's still scheduled to come out this year, right? God of War? Or was that delayed to next year?
I think it's still this year.
As far as I know, it's still this year. And
yeah.
Also, I love the fact that we're having this discussion in March 2022.
Yeah,
like, what's
yeah.
winning Game of the Year? When God of War 2 can just be like,
yep,
hold my beer.
Like, the same thing, like, what was I saying? Sorry, like Sekiro, you know, FromSoft's last game won Game of the Year. God of War won its Game of the Year. And I feel like if God of War comes out and it impresses like the first one did, it's going to be up there. But I have been vocal with the with my friends of like, I don't think God of War 2018 was a good game. I thought it was a fairly good game, but I did not think it was Game of the Year. So, personally, yes, I would probably give it to Elden Ring if we're including games that are out now and, you know, games that are on the top of my head for other contenders like God of War. But it's going to really just depend on what other games come out. But I feel like out of every game that I can think of, Elden Ring is going to be the most, like, pinpoint accurate release of what the intention was, where the thesis statement of Elden Ring is Dark Souls open world, and I feel like that's what this game did. And we've said not everyone likes these games, but this is an open world Souls game, and I like, you know, whether people like it or like Souls games or not, that's all, you know, up to themselves. But for a game that aimed to do something, this game is probably going to be one of the best to end up, like, the closest a game is going to be to nailing its intention.
The game delivered.
Yeah,
and for
game 100%
games to be,
delivered.
For games especially today to be like, and I think this was something, hold on, let me actually point this review out again, because literally it was one of the reviews we covered here. I'm vamping for time here.
Well, while you're finding that article, Taylor, I don't want to discuss, I don't want to derail the Game of the Year discussion too much, but look, what do you think the odds are that the conversation coming out of this year is going to be like, yeah, there was a lot of great games that came out. Forbidden West was great. Elden Ring was great for people that like that, but the real Game of the Year is Wordle.
Oh, yeah. There'll definitely be some tweets about, like, my favorite game was Wordle. But yeah, no, like, from an execution standpoint, I think this is probably one of the best, and the only thing is, like, for me, for my Game of the Year, is there Devil May Cry 6 coming out this year? No? Then there's not really anything else on my radar that I'm like, this is anticipated, and it paid off, you know?
So, a lot of these reviews did say some form of variation of, like, this game delivered. But GamesBeats here, and we'll leave links to all the reviews from the Nerd Stash, Matt's review at the Nerd Stash to GamesBeats, all that. But the one I was talking about specifically was GamesBeats' review, talking about like how like jaded the reviewer might have become because of the way the industry is. And I think that's a good fucking point to make, because it's not often that a game is as hyped as Elden Ring was, and then it delivers. I mean, there was hype over a vase? A walking vase at the Game Awards?
His name is Alexander.
That is Alexander the Iron Fist, okay? Greatest warrior of his people.
He has a name.
A good friend of mine from the Radahn Festival.
That's right.
Well, that was a trigger for both of you. I did not know that. I will correct myself. I do apologize, and I hope you both can find it in your hearts to forgive me. But
Alexander demands that respect.
But besides the point, what I think just this game has delivered in that sense, so it might give it that leg up, especially come the end of the year. The one thing I will add to this discussion, again, this is coming from the moron who has yet to play this game, but I think there's something to be said about being the last one to get their game in, because human beings, we're kind of idiots sometimes, and we can only retain so much at a time. So yeah, we love Elden Ring now, but come November, what if God of War 2 comes out and it's freaking amazing? And that was the most recent thing. So even if Elden Ring is a tad bit better, God of War's still going to win. And this is coming from somebody, I adore the first God of War. I think it's one of the best stories in video games. But, yeah, I went off on a tangent there. But I still think the Elden Ring might be a better game from what you both are telling me and from what I've seen personally. And I'm hoping to play it and have that opinion.
Yeah, I mean, recency bias, especially in Game of the Year discussions, is a real thing. And I'm, you know, like, just piggybacking off of what you said, I'm interested to see if Elden Ring is immune to that. I have a feeling that it probably won't be. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's always going to be, like yeah, like we're saying, it's March, and we're like, oh, Game of the Year 2022, what's it going to be? And you just never know. Like, Elden Ring is great, but not, like, yeah, you said the recency bias, but even besides that, we don't know what other games could come out, and maybe Elden Ring is, like, you know, let's say it's the peak of an open world game, but maybe this new God of War is going to be the pinnacle of those, like, linear cinematic games, and then it comes down to, do you like those cinematic games, or do you like the open world more? And it's like, where do we go from there? So I'll put money down and say Elden Ring will probably be the best open world game this year. That I can put down. But as like an overall project, you know, you never know what might come out later this year.
Now, you guys aren't you're not putting this into consideration. You guys are putting into consideration when Rockstar surprise announces GTA 6 and then releases it the next month.
Came out yesterday, actually. Check the calendar.
But no, I 100% agree with you guys, and definitely, like, it's just also a good thing for the industry that we've had in, what, a 3-week span, 2 bona fide Game of the Year contenders. So I thought that was pretty cool to see. It just does suck for Horizon to have this happen to him twice.
Yeah,
that's just the worst terrible part. Timing.
I'm trying to remember what the lineup was, but I feel like Horizon both times, don't quote me on this, but I feel like I checked this before, but Horizon both times had their release dates set in stone, and then, you know, Breath of the Wild for Zero Dawn and Elden Ring for Forbidden West, they got delayed to the week of Forbidden West.
Forbidden West
just was like, yeah, we're chilling over here, and then it's like, oh no, we're here now, and it's like, oh, okay, cool.
Elden Ring just releases a week later.
Who would guess that, like, in February, twice, when the Horizon games release, in February, when fucking nothing releases,
nothing
two of the
out.
Best games ever made come out the same week. I feel bad for them, I do.
But the games will get a ton of praise.
It already has,
them,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
So we'll get a lot of adoration, as it should. And we'll see what happens with Elden Ring. We'll see what happens in Horizon Forbidden West. Let's go ahead and get out of here. Let's talk about what we're working on and where can the people find us. Riley, what you working on and where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm not working on much. I'm just working on this podcast. You can find me in the Discord server, and you can also find me online online, Jesus. You can find me on Twitter, specifically online, at Logue, L-O-G-U-E underscore Riley, R-I-L-E-Y.
Yeah, you can find Riley on this place called the internet.
Yeah, that's right. It's a great new place.
Matt, what you working on, and where can people find you?
Currently, I do mostly strategy guides for the Nerd Stash. I did the Elden Ring review, but my main focus there is strategy guides. So you can find me over on the Nerd Stash. Online, you can find me on Twitter.com at Matt Vallee. That's M-A-T-T-V-I-L-L-E-I. No spaces, no underscores, just my name in the @. You can also find me at my WordPress at mattvallee.wordpress.com for other reviews, you know, short stories that I'm writing, stuff like that. And yeah, mostly just that. I'm working at Nerd Stash on strategy guides and just writing some short stories, trying to write some stuff down. That's what I'm working on now. I'm planning on working through Final Fantasy VI after this, and hopefully not play any more Elden Ring.
Nah, I have a feeling you're gonna play some more Elden Ring.
I cannot confirm that last part, but I will definitely try and step away from it.
As for me, you can find me on this podcast occasionally, or you can find me over on Nerds Talk Movies. And let's just get into some stuff to plug real quick. And be sure to, if you liked anything you heard today, to join our Discord server, which is also the best place right now to get a hold of us. We're still working on getting our Twitter accounts up for Power Up and Game, for Nerds Talk Movies, and for Clash at the Stash, which is going to be our third podcast here in April. And the branding for all those, it takes a little bit of time to get done. So that's why they're not up yet. So as of right now, Discord's the best way to get a hold of us. And also, we just love chatting about video games, movies, TV shows, whatever. I'm sure Riley and Matt would love to talk more about Elden Ring. If somebody wants to talk about the Batman, I'd love to talk about that. That was crazy. Speaking of the Batman, though, our spoiler talk for the Batman, it should be out now. It took a little bit longer than I thought it would to record and edit the podcast together. After all, we had like 4 people on, and that's just, it's a lot of audio. That's all I'm going to say. But it was an awesome episode. I had a blast talking with Drew, Tristan, and Michael about it. There should also be another episode of Nerds Talk Movies out by now that is a retrospective on 2020 Sonic the Hedgehog. It was a lot of fun to go back and talk about a movie that everybody thought was going to be complete crap. And instead, they changed the look of Sonic, and the movie was a surprise hit for a lot of people. So it was a lot of fun just to go back and talk about that. Jim Carrey, the awesome performance, and all sorts of other stuff. Finally, be sure to check out thenerdstash.com, where you can find video game news, movie news, TV news, reviews, opinion pieces, lists, guides. If you're having trouble with Elden Ring right now, check out some guides over on thenerdstash.com. Hell, you might click on one of Matt's articles as well.
There are plenty of guides for me on that game, trust me.
Oh, I'm sure, because there's also a lot of stuff to figure out about Elden Ring.
Yes.
So I'm sure you've gotten a lot of guides out of
that. That's what I've been saying to everyone, that like, best part of playing that of Elden Ring for the review was I was taking notes, like, these are the guides I'm going to do once I'm done.
But be sure to do that. There's all sorts of content you can find over there. I want to thank Riley for joining me. I would like to also thank Matt for joining me. I thought this was an excellent episode. Love to have you on again. Let me know if you ever want to join us.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
We will be back next week